Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzzed Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we're going to be covering the movies without which we feel deprived at Christmas. That is a very convoluted way to say it, but the movies we must see around Christmas.
Must
time.
See. Yeah, let's just make it a must see this.
Well, you could have done that before.
I could have done that before.
Whatever, fine. And that was you.
We have to apologize if there is ASMR, if someone's doing yard work outside, that's kind of the way it goes. We have our usual disclaimers, which include that there's going to be cursing, most likely.
Yeah, probably.
And there will be spoilers if you haven't seen these Christmas movies, which is a shame. You should see them. And we are having a lovely drink this time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good. We are having Iron Horse Winter's Cuvée. This is a sparkling wine from California. Our listener and I got to taste stuff at this vineyard out in California. Iron Horse is really amazing. They make really amazing sparkling wines. But this one has a tiny bit of brandy in it. It's got complexity. It is really good with food. And it looks so nice in the glass. Did you like it?
I did.
You do like it. Okay.
I do like it. Yeah,
that's right.
I've had it before, so
mm-hmm.
I'm liking it even better now, I think.
Mm. Yes. Cause you start to appreciate the extra cool aspects of it over time. It's really kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some also rans, or I know you hate that term. My goodness.
I don't hate it. I'm adjusting to it.
You're adjusting to it. So I have some runners up, or whatever we want to call them. Honorable mentions in this category. I don't know if we want to cover those first.
We can cover them. Well, if I don't know what else, we would cover them. So.
Okay. So for me, the runners up things that I know a lot of people include on their list, Elf is a really fun movie.
It's fun, yeah.
It's not a must-see for me either, but I love it, and if it's on, I'm gonna watch it.
Sure.
Polar Express, I think, is similar to that.
The creepy animation has gotten to me over time, mm-hmm. but I it's still fun, and mm-hmm. there's still things to mock about it, so mm-hmm. I can find some joy in that, I guess.
White Christmas.
White Christmas is definitely one of them.
Yeah, and White Christmas, as you know, have we talked about your White Christmas trauma?
No, because I don't think that you want that online.
Oh, yeah. My kid, Natalie and her father have White Christmas trauma, but that's just from watching it too many times one particular year.
No, White Christmas saved us from trauma.
Yeah, that's it. That's...
There were other noises in the house that we wanted to escape.
Yeah, that was bad. Yes. But anyway, so...
My honorable mention is Love Actually, because we watch it every Christmas,
yeah.
And it's a must-see around the Christmas time to make us feel like it's Christmas.
I agree. I mean, I think Love Actually is definitely, and of course it is my number one Christmas romantic movie, anything that's a number one anything, I feel like it actually is a must-see,
yeah.
But these are the ones that, if I were living alone on a deserted island and needed a Christmas movie, it's like, oh my gosh.
It's going to be one of these.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's still hard.
We have three of them that we're going to talk about, plus
actually
whatever
four.
You
yeah.
have.
I've got one.
I didn't write it down for that because I don't really care. But you can talk about that one first.
Okay, I'll talk about that one first. And that is the George C. Scott Christmas Carol. I love A Christmas Carol as a story. I think that there is a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, obviously I like morals and stories anyway, and there's definitely a moral in it. It's a ghost story. It's a little creepy.
It's really creepy, Mom.
It's got that Dickensian feel. It's like,
well, it should. It's a Dickens novel.
Yeah, but it has that kind of might I have more porridge kind of thing. It's a little bit dank.
It's very dank. It's gross to look at.
It's not gross to look at. I think there is...
It's depressing to look at.
I think the thing I love about it is the redemption arc. And I do love redemption arcs generally.
Mm.
Or just transformation arcs. And I think that it's huge in Christmas Carol.
Well, it's the only thing in Christmas Carol, really.
Right. But I mean, you look at someone who's gone their whole life screwing it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still able to come back from that. And I love that about the story. I also love that this particular version is so iconically everything. So the only weak point to me is the Ghost of Christmas Past. And
what does she do to you?
Nothing. She's just not as inspirationally great as some of the other Ghosts of Christmas Past.
One of them doesn't have any dialogue, but that's what makes them iconic.
Yeah, but this one is not that one. And so it's not the stories that they show in the past. I think that those are really well done. You've got some great actors and actresses in there. You've got Susanna York as the wife of Bob Marley. Not Bob Marley, my God, I lost my mind.
Cratchit,
yes.
Bob Marley is dead.
Yes, but he's also a reggae singer and has nothing to do with Christmas Carol.
Bob Marley.
Yeah, sorry, that is really embarrassing.
Jacob Marley.
Yes, exactly, which is why I combine them. That's really kind of embarrassing. Yeah, it must be the bubbles getting to me already. But I really love the Ghost of Christmas Present. The guy who plays that is just, he has all of the merriment and cornucopia aspects done really, really well. There's a very great richness to him, but he also has that tiny bit of menace that you kind of need for Ghost of Christmas Present. The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come in this movie is the scariest fucking thing. It's like the precursor to Dementor. It is the coolest embodiment of that I have seen. I really love the performances in this movie. I think it is really well shot. I think you've got great acting performances, and of course you've got good music. So I love this version of A Christmas Carol. I could have a whole episode on versions of A Christmas Carol, good and bad, much like I could have it on The Grinch, you know, good and bad. But I think that this is a really excellent movie.
Yeah, I don't know what it is in my brain that makes me not care about the Christmas Carol, any of the Christmas Carols, to be honest. I don't know. I really can't explain it. I just don't care. And it's not that I can't get invested in a movie that is more of a downer, like a drama or like something that's a little depressing and gross in some ways, because it can get gross. And gross as in like talking about the poor. In their eyes, the poor is the worst thing you can be, and I'm just like, okay, sure. And so, I don't know, it just I think that if I was living, for example, if I was like in the nephew's like party at the end, and I only knew his uncle Scrooge is like this crotchety old man, and he came in and he was acting all merry, I think he had a brain tumor. I don't think I would think,
you're,
oh,
so
he turned
forgiving.
I don't know what it is, but like after years of that, it's not to say you can't forgive people for their wrongs, I'm not saying that, but when it's been consistent and you've just been like,
yeah,
talk down, especially Bob Cratchit, like so much shit has gone down, and he gets you one goose for dinner and that's it. Like
he starts taking care of your child Tiny Tim and helps him live. I think that's kind of important.
Tiny Tim was on the brink of death that entire movie.
Yeah, this is really the saddest time he's Tiny Tim.
Boy, he keeps looking at the camera. I can't get past that. But
it's still better than Tiny Tammy from the Barbie Christmas Carol. It's really
I
awful.
Don't know exactly what
so
it is
bad.
About any version of the Christmas Carol. I just can't get into the story, and I don't know what it is.
I love the story. I do like to watch some version of the Christmas Carol. We've watched several. My dad's favorite was Alistair Sim. We've got the Jim Carrey animated one.
The Jim Carrey animated one, the animation's kind of creepy.
Well, right, and there's some goofiness in there. Like, they try to make it funny, which I think is a mistake.
No, yeah, you can't really add humor. The only thing I laughed at was the fact that Tiny Tim kept looking at the camera.
Well, not to say that
I can't get into a movie that's like that, but I personally like a little bit of more merriment in a Christmas movie, and it being set around Christmas and being like, well, it's Christmas. You should change now. It's like, if of all the times to change, you could have changed whenever. I don't think Christmas had anything to do with that. I think you just need to get a reality check and you need to make amend things in your life.
A lot of people have reality checks around the
I'm
holidays,
not saying that's not true. I'm just saying that, like,
or
I
end
just
of the
don't like
year, or
Scrooge, and I and no, like,
you're not
flip
supposed to like
and
Scrooge.
him being afraid of his own mortality and that changing his ways is interesting, but I'm just like, okay,
It
well,
sucks,
anything, what, how
certainly.
about you think about the, like, effects of your actions, which obviously is what they're trying to show him, but I'm just like, okay, well, you didn't cause this kid to die, but you certainly didn't help, or your nephew is trying to reach out and be a kind person, and you're just like
Wrote
completely
that for
ignoring
him,
him,
yeah.
and just because he reminds you of your dead sister. Like, I mean, like, that makes sense, especially after all these years. It's like, what? I want to see the logic, but I think the fact that he's so old at, but, like, and that's true for any version of Christmas Carol, that he's always portrayed as he's lived a full life, he's very, very old. And so he was gonna die soon enough anyway in those times. But I think that if you caught him at, like, a midlife crisis and then he changed his ways and had more time to, like, amend his behavior, I think that would be more inspirational for me. Because, I mean,
Well, it
Scrooge
sounds like he
is
did
living
have
on
time.
minutes.
Well, he's not
For
living
all
on
we know,
minutes.
that, like, future thing was it a day from now? Like, we don't know.
It sounds like it didn't happen that way
No,
because at the
but you
end,
see
in
what
the
I
end,
mean, though? Like, I feel like he needed more time to amend his behavior. And the really quick flip at the end, I don't think it's as effective for me as it is for you. But that's just my problem with the Christmas Carol in general. It's not necessarily with any of the
it's a
performances,
little like the whole Grinch thing too. It's very similar as far as
which
in
is why
depth
I
it
can't
goes.
get behind it being longer than half an hour.
Yeah,
Because if it's a half hour, you're already cramming enough in that I'm just like, okay, we can just montage this, it's fine. But for something like the Jim Carrey version, the other Jim Carrey version, it is Jim,
Grinch
yeah,
movie?
of the
Yeah.
Grinch, it's longer, and so, like, I don't really see a
But
flip there either.
it's not about the Grinch. That's part of the thing that's wrong with that. But anyway,
There are so many things wrong with that
the
movie.
bottom line is I do think that that is a worthwhile story to tell at this time of year because
Yes.
again, you so many people have that, like they're estranged from their family. They're, and you can make changes to that. You can change your relationship with the world and you don't have to be miserable. I think that is a message some people definitely need to hear at this time of year.
I absolutely agree. And I'm not saying we shouldn't watch it around Christmas. And I'm fine with that being on your list and all that stuff. But personally, for me, I want to watch something a little bit more happy.
I want to add one other honorable mention that is not, we didn't mention a minute ago, the Nutcracker. The
The
real, no, the real
Nutcracker?
ballet,
Damn
the
it.
real ballet Nutcracker. There's a version from the San Francisco Opera Ballet. Is that what it, but
Yeah.
that is unbelievably beautiful. They often have it on NPR. We actually bought it because it was just
The music's
gorgeous.
gorgeous,
It is, but
obviously.
the
It's
performance,
Tchaikovsky.
yeah, the performance, the sets for that, totally
Is
worth
that
seeing.
Tchaikovsky?
It is
Okay, just
Tchaikovsky.
double
Yeah.
checking. That and Swan Lake.
Yeah,
I just
yeah.
need to make sure that they're both in the
They
same.
are both.
Yeah. But I really love the music for Nutcracker. The story makes no goddamn sense, but which is why I kind of prefer the Barbie version. I'm not gonna lie. I like adding a plot. I don't like it being a parade. Like, I mean, is what these dancers are doing incredible? Abso-fucking-lutely it is. I can't do that. I couldn't even do that when I was a dancer. But I just, like, what are we doing? Like, what's happening here?
Well, I think that is the challenge with most ballets that the story has to be told without words, and some groups are better at doing it than
I'm
others.
not saying that. I'm saying the Nutcracker in itself is a weird ass
It
story.
is a weird story.
Whereas, like, you have things like Giselle or Swan Lake, which has a really rich, very deep, not deep, but you know what I mean? Like complex story with, like, actual characters and, like, moving through a plot, like a normal thing. Whereas the Nutcracker is like, all right, well, we're going to shrink Clara down. She's going to go to where they are in the
They
Sugar
do it
Plum.
so cool in such a
No, it's
cool way in
very
that
cool.
version.
It's
It's really
very
awesome
cool. But then there's just a
Oh,
lot
and
of,
here's the child molester uncle. Yay.
oh yeah, the clockmaker, yeah. And then you've got Drosselmeyer is his name. And then you've got like bullshit in the meadow. Like you get, you have the beautiful like Snow Queen, the snowflake dance and stuff like that. That's really cool. But and there's like actual snow on, not actual snow, but snow on stage, and that's cool. Exactly. And then you got the Sugar Plum Fairy and the sugar. Oh, sorry, Sugar Plum. Yeah. The Sugar Plum Fairy and all of the flowers and stuff, and there's a beautiful dance with that. But then after that, you're just getting a parade of random ass people, and it's just like, we're from Spain, okay? We're from Germany, all right? We're from Russia, okay? And then like, there's no consistency of what the fuck's happening.
Hey, what
you've already defeated the Rat King at this point.
Well, I mean, they're just celebrating, but here's the thing. Part of what's cool about it from Tchaikovsky's perspective is like he's just proving that I can write these kinds of themes into the music.
And then at the end, Clara gets like changed into the Sugar Plum Princess and a costume, which is cool, but she also turns into a completely different dancer in the version we have. And they like her and the Nutcracker do a lot of crazy shit on stage and do a final like pas de deux, but then it's just like, okay, and then it was all a dream. It's like, okay, sure.
Nutcracker?
Nutcracker?
Yes.
But
I do think that it is a fun thing to do. It's an all, it is not an essential, but it is.
It's not fun. An essential for me, but it's fun.
Let's get to the essentials. What is your number two, Natalie?
I have three.
Well, what is your number three, Natalie?
Christmas Story.
I love Christmas Story too.
Yeah. Christmas Story.
It's probably number four. Three-ish for me too.
I'm not like ranking them. They're just all really, it's just three of them that I'm talking mostly in like the order that we watched them in. Mm-hmm. Christmas Story is a great movie. If you haven't watched it, there are a lot of iconic moments. There's great narration, which I think what I like about Christmas Story is that really encapsulates what it's like to be a kid at that stage of life in middle school. Obviously I'm not a boy. So I
really,
I'm not a boy, and if it wasn't clear, and so I don't necessarily know what the boys' experience was. It was in middle school, but I did have a brother, so I really like identify with Randy for most of this movie. The little brother, I identify a lot with this poor little boy. he's iconic. He's so funny. And the sibling dynamics are perfect. That is exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, and have your older brother wanting a Red Rider.
That's definitely a Nick thing to do.
Hey, Nick has a whole arsenal of airsoft guns that were a part of Christmas for many years.
Yeah, there's amazing music that's very childlike and just, I keep saying iconic, but that's going to be true for a lot of these.
Yeah, these movies, these three that we're going to be talking about, I think have a lot of those core images that you think of for a Christmas movie. Christmas Story is really excellent. In part, you're right, because of the childhood narrative. But some of it is just like so true even now. So that it's set in like
the 50s,
late 40s, early 50s. It is, and of course, it has all of the nostalgia type things with that. But it also has just some really great stuff that's true. Like, you know, you gotta walk to school in the snow and there are bullies and kids doing stupid stuff like
doing each other. There's a very specific thing for Christmas that your parents aren't gonna get you. And
because you'll shoot your eye out.
You'll shoot your eye out. The daydreams are very funny.
They're hilarious.
It's what every kid does.
The daring somebody to put their tongue against a frozen pole.
I wouldn't do that. That's
but you can see somebody doing something. This totally would happen.
A horrible idea, but yes.
But still, it would happen.
It would.
You've got so many good ones in here.
Just naming a few things. Fragile. Must be Italian.
It's a major award.
Lamp.
Your father has a leg lamp.
I know.
Because
it's a mini leg lamp.
It's a mini leg lamp, but it's really awful.
Fudge.
Fudge. Yeah, like I heard that my dad, and this is true for me, my father like worked in curse words like an artist works in oil and paints, much like they're describing with this. So like this idea that you're gonna lie about where you learned the word, it's like
okay. Well, then he lies and says it was his friend Schwartz who taught him the word. And his mother on the phone starts beating him and being like, what did I do, Mom? What did I do?
So
fucking funny.
There's the whole Ovaltine
thing. Be sure to drink your Ovaltine. A crummy commercial? Son of a bitch! that is the only time that we actually hear him curse, which I think is perfect.
Yeah, it's great.
Lamp breaks, and then not a finger.
The dad
reminds me so much of your dad. I think it's just the way he speaks. The
temper, yeah. No, Kevin was like, is Kevin the best?
I don't know.
And I've forgotten. He's fantastic.
He's fantastic in this
film.
The Wizard of Oz.
So they go to see Santa, and there's this kid ahead of them, like dressed a little bit
like
the guy from Up in the beginning.
Yes, very, very like a fan of Charles Muntz.
Yes, exactly.
With his stupid flight goggles on.
Yes,
and like a little flight cap.
And he keeps turning to Ralphie and saying, "Like I like the Wizard of Oz."
Oh wait, I like Santa. And then the Wizard of Oz people come by dressed as like people in Wizard of Oz, and then he goes, "I like the Wizard of Oz."
What the fuck does Wizard of Oz have to do with Christmas? I would like to know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I like the Tin Man.
I have referenced
that line before, and that's why we've watched this forever.
Yeah.
Power goes out. Don't anybody move.
Yeah,
the pink bunny suit's iconic.
Oh, it's so great.
And his dad getting him the air rifle is very sweet.
Yeah, the turkey, I think, is really funny that the neighbor's dogs come and eat the turkey, yeah, and they end up going out for Chinese instead. It's very funny.
That is funny.
It's very funny. It is a sweet movie. I think it is worth watching every year. Absolutely.
So this next one was the next one that we watched. Again, this is in no particular order because
this is number
one.
For me,
I think personally, this is the best movie of all of the ones that we've talked about. Like just being an actual movie, first of all, mm-hmm, but also with like the story and stuff like that. It's just the best movie.
Right.
And do I think that it is very particular to Christmas? Not necessarily. I think that it's important to watch during Christmas because it is technically set during Christmas. But I think this is a year-round movie that you could watch anytime, personally. Yeah.
And it is It's a Wonderful Life. Because
so
it's
good.
A Wonderful Life. And I know I had this discussion with a number of people what their favorite Christmas movie was, just to listen. You get, you know, Christmas Story feedback, you get, you know, Elf, those kinds of things. A number of people, when I mentioned this, were like, oh, it's so sappy. I'm like, it is
what are you talking about?
It's such a great movie. I was talking
to my friends about it. My friends were just like, oh, well, it's just depressing. I'm like,
No, it's not.
It's uplifting. Yeah. Did you watch it correctly? No.
Did you watch it all the way through?
Yeah. Did you watch that? No, it's not depressing. Well, it has a depressive moment that leads to a surge of like
redemption
and knowledge that we see it more.
Yeah, the transformation.
We see the transformation more. Most of the movie is this transformation.
Right.
And so I think that's why it works for me better than Scrooge.
It's a different kind of transformation. So in many ways,
it's an acknowledgement of your accomplishments.
Yeah. So George Bailey, who is the main character,
played by Jimmy Stewart, who's fucking fantastic in this movie.
He is amazing.
Like, Jimmy Stewart is a fantastic actor regardless, but really in this movie, he gets me.
Yeah. So
he gets George, to me.
Yeah. George Bailey is almost like a Charlie Brown in this. You know, it's a little, you know, it's like the adult version of Charlie Brown. It has more adult themes, but he's somebody who does for other people and does for other people and always does the right thing.
He's better than Charlie Brown.
He is.
He's not a selfish little bitch.
Charlie Brown's not a selfish little bitch.
He can be.
Lucy is definitely. But you know, just that feeling of
responsibility.
Right. That I think, you know, the thing about it is that, like, he needs to be reminded why he's amazing and why his life is important, because he just feels like he's never gonna win. Like, he's always on the downside of everything.
Yeah, I've got to say, I didn't write too many notes for this only because I was watching it, because I just get really caught up in the movie, and so I just didn't write anything down. I wrote some stuff down, like incredible acting for everybody involved,
including the kid actors.
The kid actors are great. Awesome. Donna Reed's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Love Donna Reed.
There are a couple of things, and I kind of want to just run through it
pretty quickly. Sure, these are significant events in his life that we get to see. You know, we get to see that he saved his little brother from falling through the ice, which, you know, not many people do that. You know, it's pretty remarkable. He protects Mr. Gower, his employer. He tries, again, doing the right thing. He understands, you know, that his employer has lost his son and he's made a mistake. He basically saves that man's life.
That man and the person he was going to give poison to accidentally.
Right. And so,
which was a child, I believe.
Right. So he goes, and his dad's a good guy. He respects his father.
Who runs a building and loan
company, and is constantly being harassed by the most, the richest man in town, which is Mr. Potter. Like, all I could think is Potter stinks.
We need badges.
But he's always, George is always wanting to, like, go out into the world and travel and do amazing things. And
he doesn't want to get stuck in it, this one horse town.
It is a small town and everybody knows everybody. And they all grew up together and it's all, like, super familiar, but not like there's not anything new or inspirational to him. But he sees the value in where he is. And
he sees the value in the people as well.
Right. And
just like his dad did.
And one of the things that's amazing is this girl, Mary, who's played by Donna Reed, who's unbelievably fucking gorgeous.
We already knew that. Donna Reed is insanely gorgeous.
She is insanely gorgeous. They end up meeting up, you know, they've known each other all their lives, basically. And they end up actually having a small romantic moment at a graduation party.
After a graduation party.
But it starts at the graduation party where they both like fall into a pool after a dance contest. And
well, it starts for him. Yeah. She's always loved him.
Yeah, she's been in love with him from like day one. And I think some of that may have had to do with the fact that he saved his brother. You know, that she probably knew about that and was probably
In the same class as his brother. So yeah. She would know his brother
pretty well. So but you know, they have this romantic thing about like this old abandoned house.
Which they end up living in.
George keeps missing out on going to college because, you know, his dad dies and he has to save the business because
so no he sends one else, his brother instead.
Right. And his brother then marries some girl named Ruth.
Whose father offers him employment and has a bright future. And so he lets him go instead of going to college.
Yeah, but this is actually a great romance too, because what happens after they celebrate the Harry and Ruth wedding is that his mom's like, oh, you know, Mary Hatch is home. You need to go see her.
She just got back from college.
And this scene where George goes to see Mary, and of course, there's a little bit before that. There's this other girl, Violet, who's just in love with George too, but she's kind of a hoe. And so he's not interested really. Sure. He's interested because she's beautiful, but he's not interested because
of any of her thoughts.
Right. She's not a very deep thinker. And Mary is just, she's both. She's been to college also. And this scene where he goes to see Mary, because Mary's still in love with him. She's still romantically attached to like this one night that they had that was
three or four years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a while back and she still remembers like every detail of it. And he's kind of like, oh yeah, that. And he's very dismissive of it, mostly because he's resisting it so hard. He is resisting so hard the idea of like settling down in this town.
Mm-hmm. And it's not because of her.
No.
He's obviously been thinking about her too.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, I think that you've hit the nail on the head of like, he just doesn't want to settle down here and feel trapped. Right. Because he's basically just given away his ability to like go to college and get out of the business of building and loan, because he was going to switch places essentially with his brother.
Yeah, Harry is supposed to take over.
And then Harry has this whole future thing now, which George had no idea about. And Harry's just like, okay, well, I don't know. And Harry's sympathetic and he's like, listen, I didn't accept the job.
I'll do it. Like, you can hold the bag. He says all the right stuff.
But George immediately knows, it's like, no, this is a good opportunity for you. I'm going to let you, I'll be, again, the sacrificial lamb. You go ahead and do your thing and I'll stay here where I don't want to be.
Right.
And so it's not to say that he doesn't want to learn about like architecture And because he is interested in that, and not, and so this is technically a job within that specification, but
right, it's, because it funds buildings,
but he also wants to travel, right. And so he has this scene with Mary, and he's really resistant to like admitting feelings and stuff like that, and Mary's kind of forcing his hand by being adorable and awesome, mm-hmm. and her mother wants her to marry one of George's friends, Sam. But that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there's this moment where they're like both on the phone with Sam, like next to each other.
There's a scene right before that where she's answering the phone, and you know, she answers the phone, and you see him. He is out of focus, picking up his hat in the next room, and she's put on the voice because she, you know, she's not,
trying to get him jealous.
Well, right, but she's also like, you know, she's not really interested in talking to Sam, but hey, you know, George is here, so I gotta act like it. So
because she initially, like, George had just left, and she answers the phone, and she's like, hello, and she's not really interested. But then as soon as George comes back for his hat, she's like, oh, hello, Sam, how are you?
Yeah, and you see him react, and it's out of focus, but the reaction shot of him being like, damn it, you know, like,
yeah. that really switches a flip.
It does. It
flips a switch.
That
whoa.
And you see it on his face.
Switches a flip.
And right, and so he's going out the door. And Sam says, oh, let me talk to George. Because she's talking about, oh, George is here. And he's like, oh, George, yeah, let me talk to him. And so she calls him back. Close
proximity.
Right. And he's smelling her.
And then he's just like, I'm not going to settle down. I'm not going to settle down. I'm not going to settle down. Literally, like, shaking her. Like, I'm not going to settle down, Mary. And then he's just like, and damn it, Mary. And that's when they start kissing.
So
just like, George, I know, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I love you too.
So they get married, and then they're going to go on this really awesome honeymoon that, like, with like $2,000, which is a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
And so they're going to like go anywhere, just like go across the world. Right. And then there's a bank run because of the
depression.
Well, the beginning of the depression, right. The stock market crash. Right. And so everyone's freaking out about their finances and trying to pull out their stock out of the building and loan.
Right.
And their shares and such. And so Mary also agrees to this. She like gives them the money out of their like their honeymoon expenses, yeah. Their budget. And they use that to keep the building and loan alive, right, during the bank run.
And then she goes and makes up in this leaky, broken down house. She makes it look like Donna Reed. So Donna Reed actually had a TV show at one point. Like, she was like the perfect mother in the 50s. Okay. She had a TV show, and she makes it look exactly like, you know, this beautiful, perfect household in this leaky house.
Time passes. They have a lot of children, and then war. Yes, they have a lot of children. War comes. Harry, George's brother, he is a war hero, and he's getting decorated with the Medal of Honor. While George feels like he didn't really contribute. And then some money, a lot of money, $8,000, gets misplaced by his uncle when he was going to make a bank deposit, and ends up in the hands of Mr. Potter accidentally.
Mr. Potter steals the fucking money. This is part of how bad he is.
Yes. And then so George freaks out. Understandably, that's a lot of money. That would be enough to like close the building and loan if they didn't get it back. And so he goes begging to Mr. Potter for like a loan, because at one point Mr. Potter was feeling threatened by George, and they had opened like a neighborhood called Bailey's Park full of like nice homes that can be built for cheap,
right,
and lower rents so that people can actually live. And kind so
yeah.
He felt threatened by that, and he was going to offer George a job for like a lot of money, but then George was like, no, I'm not going to do that because I have principles. Right. But now George is asking for him for a loan for $8,000, and Potter's like, oh, well, do you look at that, all high and mighty, now you're coming crawling back to me. And of course he's awful about it, and
he throws like George's words in his face, you're a warped old man, you're a warped young man.
Yeah. And then he has a warrant out for his arrest because of
the missing money.
And so it's messy because the bank examiner came for the money for the deposit,
Well, no, he came just to make sure the books were accurate, and they weren't, because the
money
was missing. Went missing that day.
Yes.
And they were also preparing for his brother Harry to come home.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
We don't have to go into all of it.
No.
Anyway,
bottom line is George wants to kill himself
because he has a life insurance policy worth $15,000 that would technically basically just save them. And he also, like, he snaps at Mary. Everything's going wrong. It's a horrible day. Mm-hmm. And so he goes to the bridge in the middle of a snowstorm, and he's considering jumping. Meanwhile, all this time we've been watching George's life via guardian angels talking about him.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be sending Clarence, a guardian angel in training, mm-hmm. down to help him. And so this gives him context, and Clarence goes down, he jumps into the water and forces George to save him instead of George jumping. Right. And letting himself drown.
And Clarence lets George see what life would be like without him, and how the town would be a completely different place, and the people's lives would be ruined, basically.
Yeah, his brother would never be alive. Well,
he would not
have saved his brother, so his brother would have drowned.
And so
there are so many people that would have died. There were a lot of people who just would have had a better life just because of his low rents in Bailey Park and have an actual home. And then there's Mary, who would end up as a librarian for some reason.
No, God not a forbid. Librarian.
That is the one thing I cannot get behind. I'm just like, really? Donna Reed puts on glasses and it's the end of the world? What? Sorry. Anyway. And then, like, I don't know. Potter basically took over the...
In that timeline, he took over and made it
Potterville instead of Bedford Falls.
And it's a place that's like a vice den. You know, there's a lot of criminal prosecution.
It's a lot like Back to the Future Part 2, where Biff takes over the world and it's full of casinos. Yeah. That's what this is. And but within a small town. Anyway,
and George realizes that he had a wonderful life and he wants to come back and have his life.
It's an amazing message about how every life matters and touches so many others in different ways that you never really think about.
But part of what happens in part of, after he makes that decision, he gets home and he's ecstatic to be home.
And he's just grateful for everything that he has.
Let's face it, Mary kicks ass because she gets... She went canvassing and came up with piles of money. Everyone shows up to their house. They have a giant party.
Especially paying him back for all the good that he's done in the community.
Yeah, and Harry comes
in. They have this disposable income because he's so low on rent.
Right, and Harry comes in, his brother comes in the snowstorm, and he raises a glass to him and says, to my big brother George, the richest man in town.
And it's not because of money, it's because of his relationships with all these amazing people and the people that he's helped. And yes, I got very teary-eyed when we watched that the other day. It makes me emotional.
So good. I love It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a wonderful movie.
And it's a definite, I gotta watch it every year.
You have to.
Yep.
It's so good.
Required.
Anyway, and then the last one that we watched was Christmas Vacation, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Which is super fun, and it is your brother's favorite. So,
this is one we watch every year just because
it's fun.
It's fun. It's iconic. It's great.
Yeah. There's a little Charlie Brown Christmas going on here too.
It's a Christmas staple in our household. And I basically wrote, this is what happens when you put too much pressure on having the perfect Christmas.
What?
And this is definitely what it's like to have the whole family staying with you for the holidays.
Like, fuck.
It's basically... We're following Clark and his family.
Clark W. Griswold
Jr. And he's trying to make the perfect Christmas. He's a perfectionist. He has this really high ideal for like vacations and family events.
I have no idea what that's about. I really don't understand any of that.
I wonder. Anyway, he's really trying to like all the family, the in-laws, his parents, they're going to be all staying in his house. And then his cousin-in-law, Eddie, and his family show up to stay. And it's just a whole thing.
My favorite part of this movie. And of course, there are a lot of really hilarious things going on in this movie. But the neighbors,
Todd
and Margo,
are so funny.
Oh my God. I love them. I hate them as humans. They are so fucking funny.
Say the line.
Why is the carpet wet?
Todd?
I don't know, Margot. I fucking love that. Oh my God, so much.
I love it so much.
And why is all the carpet? Why is the carpet all wet? Todd? Julia Louis-Dreyfus, this might be my favorite role of hers. I've watched Veep. I've watched some of Seinfeld. This is my favorite role of hers. It's so funny.
She is so funny.
I don't know who plays Todd, but he's great too.
They are ultimate 80s yuppies. You know, like all of the latest trends and the latest whatever. And oh, we're all about money and not about family and, you know, whatever. It's all about having like the right accoutrement, which again, it's like not what Christmas is all about either. And I think, you know, we get to see that juxtaposition, but it's hilarious. And of course, mm-hmm. you know, Clark and his interactions with his family. There are so many great vignettes in here.
There's a lot of slapstick as well.
Right. So, you know, they go and get this ginormous tree. Chevy Chase, his lines, especially toward the end when things start going
get there in a second.
Oh, my God.
There are some Eddie antics, of course. Eddie is probably my least favorite character because I know, but he really pisses me off. And then we get to Christmas dinner. Grace, she passed away 30 years ago. They want you to say Grace, the blessing.
Yeah.
Poor cat. That cat did not deserve that.
Oh, yeah. So Aunt Bethany's cat is wrapped up as a Christmas present and brought into the house. And then she was on the Christmas lights and
gets electrocuted.
It is. And we are cat people. We absolutely adore cats. But this whole through line is so funny. And wrong.
The rant that Clark has after he's looking forward to his Christmas bonus from his corporate job, and he needs it to cover the deposit to put in a swimming pool in his backyard. And he's really looking forward to it. And instead he gets a Jelly of the Month Club subscription. And he has this long rant about how awful his boss is. And it's very relatable and funny. And it ends with, hallelujah, holy shit, where's the Tylenol?
And then there's this whole thing with a squirrel in the replacement tree.
Oh,
that attacks Margo. It's so funny.
Yes.
And then we're at the threshold of hell.
Worse? How could things get any worse? Look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
The SWAT team is almost like a Blues Brothers thing where SWAT ends up at their house. It is so funny.
And it's a message about realizing what Christmas is all about. Just being with your family and loving all that
stuff. Yes, and embracing the fucked upness that is actually Christmas with your family.
Because that's what Christmas is.
That's
fucked
right.
up. Yeah. And you've got to just accept that.
Yes, exactly. And so those three are all excellent. I do think that if I were going to be on a desert island, it would probably be
It's a Wonderful Life. Because there's a mixture of a poignant message, some good comedy, because of just how
A
love story. There, you get a lot from that. I think another reason why I can't really get into Christmas Carol, and again, it's not because I can't get into something that's all serious. I think I needed something to like a little bit of levity somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted to do that with like showing the nephew's party and like calling Scrooge a bitch or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not very funny to me. It's maybe Dickensian funny, but I need something a little, not like low bar kind of comedy or anything like that, but like anything, literally anything to make me laugh.
Well, the Jim Carrey animated sort of tries.
It's to not so what I want, fails. Though.
It fails.
I don't need slapstick. I just need
like the physical party and that kind of stuff. It's supposed to be more lighthearted than, but it's not. It's not a lighthearted story at all.
If I want to see a Christmas Carol that is funny, I will watch the Play That Goes Wrong version, and I will do that.
Yeah, there's a Ryan Reynolds version out there.
Oh, that's spirited.
It's
the only funny part about that to me, or the one that the only part I remember from that is the Ghost of Christmas Future running up out of breath and then pointing. that's funny. All that it does.
That is funny.
It's so funny. So funny. That's the only thing I remember from that movie, though.
But yeah. In any case, we really recommend all of these movies. We want to know if you have something that you think is better, bring it on. We'll watch it and then we'll talk about you. it and you.
So we will talk,
about you. So next on our list is actually the best New Year's movie.
I know what mine is.
Yeah, I know what mine is too. Although there's some close seconds.
Not really.
But also we have on our list as a new category that we might address this year is Christmas action movie.
We did not agree to that.
So maybe we won't this year. And maybe we'll do it next year. We'll see. In any case, we are really looking forward to sharing favorite New Year's movies with you. We hope that you join us. And
cheers.